It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Thrilled to be here with the coach, Matt Doherty. And happy to be spending this time with each and every one of you. Our phone number, if you want to be a part of the conversation, is, as always, 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Officer-involved shooting taking place in the city of Charlotte earlier today. Our own Brett Jensen was there on the scene getting us updated information. What do we know as of right now, Brett Jensen?
So the suspect that wound up getting shot was wanted or was a suspect for an earlier robbery this week at a hotel, at the Royal Inn Hotel. Here we are a couple days later. Somebody sees him, and the cops get there. And when the cops arrive, he takes off running, short foot chase, and he turns around and shoots at the cops. Missed. One cop pulled his gun, fired. Connected with the suspect. Suspect went down.
Wow.
Cops applied CPR. He was taken to the emergency room, given surgery, and last we heard, he was in surgery but in stable condition.
Okay. And this all started where and under what circumstances?
Yeah, so it's all up there near North Graham Street, right where Graham Street crosses and meets I-85 at the Budget Inn Hotel. That's where it took place. Earlier this week, the suspect was wanted for robbing the Royal Inn Hotel. Right there in the, you know, and it's not the world's greatest part of town, and generally people will stay there maybe for a couple of weeks at a time or whatever, and they have a lot of issues and a lot of crime in that area. And this is where the suspect was holed up at. When cops showed up, he took off running and turned around and shot and fired at an officer. Officer withdrew his gun, shot, connected, and like I said, the officers then applied CPR like they're supposed to do, and then was taken to the hospital, and you know that CPR may have saved his life.
How are they handling these officer-involved shootings? Has anything changed in the wake of George Floyd? Are they gonna put them on desk duty or take them off street duty while they do an investigation and try to assess whether or not it was a righteous shot?
Yeah, you know exactly, Brett. So a few years ago, locally, you know, it was the officers involved, no matter what the cause or the reason, is automatically put on administrative leave, and then with pay, I should say, and then the State Bureau of Investigation will handle the actual investigation of it, and that actually changed a couple of years ago. It used to be an internal investigation, and then to have full transparency and maybe non-bias, they handed it over to the state to the SBI, and they will handle everything. In terms of you know all the investigations,
and similar to what we just saw take place up at Pascatank County, right, where you had the controversial shooting as the officers were attempting to serve a warrant, that ended up in the hands of the state. The state made the decisions that whether or not there were going to be charges or what have you, right?
Exactly. Yep. It's the exact same situation, even though it did not involve a death. It's the exact same situation. You know, and it's been a busy day today because, I mean, I was literally at a luncheon with Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis when this happened because we got a chance to interview Thomas Davis for the first time in a while today. Luke Kuechly bailed on us. But, and then tonight, here's what I'm also curious to talk with ask Coach about. So tonight, at all places, Irvin Magic Johnson is throwing out the first pitch tonight for the brand new Gastonia Minor League Baseball Honey Hunters team. And he's throwing out the first pitch tonight. Coach, did you ever play against him, like in a scrimmage or when you were, in NBA training camps?
No. Would love to. I'm curious, are they a Dodger affiliate?
No, there's, matter of fact, they're an independent baseball, but it turns out the owner of the Honey Hunters, which is like the world's greatest name, is really good friends with Magic Johnson from businesses that they do together.
And how about that?
And so there's an actual mural of Magic Johnson on the outfield wall.
Wow.
That's interesting.
They should have the picture of Magic throwing it to James Worthy since he's a native Gastonian.
Great call.
Indeed he is.
Right?
James Worthy or Sleepy Floyd.
Yeah, well, James Worthy.
Wow.
But Magic.
I mean, that is my high school. I will support James Worthy. That's my high school.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And my teammate.
True, too.
But no, Magic, now that's pressure. Like, can Magic throw a strike from 60 feet 6 inches?
See, I only threw out one first pitch for the Hickory Crawdads, and Homer the Crawdad – or Conrad the Crawdad was in the batter's box, and I buzzed the tower and almost hit him in the head.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah, it wasn't on purpose, I assure you.
Magic's got to show that he owns that plate.
Right.
And you got to give a little chin music if you have to.
Right. Back him off.
Brush him back.
Yeah. Yeah. I threw out a first pitch at a Notre Dame.
In the kitchen?
I threw a first pitch out at Notre Dame, yeah. Michigan, in Grand Rapids. And I warmed up and went from the mound. I didn't step up. I didn't do like the Presidente toss from the grass.
Yeah. That's weak.
And I went Louis Tiant.
There we go.
I threw my back to the catcher and just threw it right.
Very good.
Oh, yeah.
Next time you got to do a little Bob Gibson, man, spin that front leg. Whip that
front
leg.
Yeah, I think my mistake was not warming up on the pitcher's mounds in the bullpen area. I was warming up on just flat ground.
Yeah.
And then you go to the mound. People don't realize how steep and big that mound is.
Yeah. That mound is big. It's steep. And you gotta compensate for that, being up on top like that.
Yeah, got to compensate.
I mean, otherwise, that ball just gets completely out of control. And the next thing you know, Brett Jensen is a headline in a newspaper article.
Yeah, for taking out the mascot.
Falls right down.
I almost took out Conrad the Crawdad in 1998. So, yeah. Mm.
The rest of the story. I'm Paul.
That's right. But by the way, Coach, you know, I bring up Sleepy Floyd. You should have fond memories after beating him in the national championship.
Yeah, yeah. No, of course I do. Yeah, Sleepy's still in the area. I see him at some golf outings.
I literally saw him at the Wells Fargo. We talked for a little
bit. There
you go. Say?
Yep.
Too bad Coach wasn't with you.
What a great player he was. Yeah, great, great player, great competitor. Played for the Golden State Warriors for a long time.
Good stuff with Brett Jensen and the coach. Thanks for coming by, Brett. We appreciate you, man.
Anytime, Brett. I appreciate it.
All right, we'll talk to you in a little bit. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show alongside the coach, who is presented here today by Neogenics. Good to have you here in the room.
Always good to be here.
Yesterday, during the press conference that is done on a daily basis there at the White House, it wasn't Jen Psaki behind the mic. It was Karine Jean-Pierre, who was behind the mic. She's an assistant communications manager, communications director at the White House, was asked about this seeming flip-flop from Joe Biden on the investigation into the Wuhan Virology Institute. This is cut number 31. Here's what the press secretary, the acting press secretary, said yesterday about this investigation into the Wuhan Virology Institute.
Today, the president asked the intelligence community to redouble their efforts to collect and analyze information that could bring us closer to a definitive conclusion and to a report back to him in 90 days. Back in early 2020, the president called for the CDC to get access to China to learn about the virus so we could fight it more effectively.
Well, that's funny because Donald Trump's administration was doing that very thing. And when President Biden came into office, he killed off that investigation till Tony the Fauci started talking about the different Wuhan virology lab questions that were up. And he was humiliated yesterday by John Kennedy from Louisiana, who said to him, you know, how do you know, like, you gave the money to the Chinese Virology Institute and it didn't end up as part of gain of function? And he said, well, it wasn't on the Internet website. We looked at the Internet website. We didn't see any evidence of that. So now President Biden is now doing a 180. It's a 360. Because he was against it, and now he's for it, and now he's going whipping around 90 degrees to see if we're going to find out about this, Coach. This is an embarrassment. He should have just left the old investigation stand.
Well, Biden tried to undo everything
that
Trump did, even if it was sound, like the border.
That's right.
Okay, like the COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Fauci is losing credibility by the minute.
Oh.
I mean, he's flip-flopping more than a dolphin.
That's right.
I mean, he's just all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's getting very political, because when he's asked about the grant money, he's basically saying, you know, we didn't give the grant money to the lab. You know, but it's like me saying, hey, Brett,
yes, sir.
I'm going to give you this money. You give it to the lab.
Mm-hmm.
Did it end up with the lab? That's the question, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's not play Bill Clinton, you know, linguistics here.
That's right. That's right.
And then the thing about the moratorium and, you know, and I think that he's getting exposed He is getting exposed right before our eyes.
And what's important to note about this idea about the money, money's fungible. You give the money and then you assume that they're going to account for how they spent it. But anybody who's had a kid in college understands the kid can call you up and say, hey, I need $50 for a book, when really he needs $50 for Friday night. And unless you go to the college and look to see the book he bought, you're not going to know. I mean, I'm sorry, it's fungible.
Well, fungible is an interesting word. We'll talk about that at the break. It's you're talking about China.
China.
You're talking about one of the most, I mean, everybody, like, you know, you go into the, like, golf clubs. Mm-hmm. Where did all the fake golf clubs come from? You know, China. Like, all these products that were counterfeit products,
yes,
a lot of them came from China.
That's right.
And so now you expect that, okay, I'm going to give this money to them in good faith, and they're going to do the right thing.
That's the thing.
How naive is that?
It's incredibly naive. It's a situation where we are relying on the word of a regime that has routinely hacked into our operations, bootlegged our products, like you said, spies on us, has supported street riots, according to Mike Pompeo when he was Secretary of State. They shut down the Houston consulate because they were funding riots around the country. The Chinese government was funding riots around the country in different cities. And so as a consequence, I'm not taking their word for it.
No. Like,
I am not taking their word for it. It's not happening. The problem, though, is you have a situation with President Biden and Hunter Biden who were involved in a Mr. 10% kind of a situation. And that has never been disputed. It has never been disputed that Tony Bobulinski and them, they were in cahoots with the Chinese Communist Party. And so coming up here in a couple of minutes, we're going to talk to Jeffrey Lord, who's going to come by. He writes for the American Spectator, and we're going to ask him, you know, what's going on here with this back and forth? I want to get to the bottom of stuff. The Senate apparently wants to get to the bottom of stuff because they voted 100-0 today to declassify the information that we have on what the president has seen on China and their involvement in this lab leak potentially happening where the Wuhan virus or the coronavirus, or the COVID-19 leapt out of the lab into the streets where people got sick versus somebody ate a bat because the bat ate a pangolin because the pangolin ate a rat or whatever it was. And suddenly now the guy that ate the bat becomes infected. That is a huge jump that has never been seen. There's no evidence of that. And Fauci said that yesterday. He said, well, if you're looking at the evidence, there's less evidence that there was a guy ate a bat and got coronavirus than there is with the potential of a lab leak. But we don't know because we're going to trust the Chinese. So we'll talk to
you. You do a good Fauci imitation.
I appreciate that, man. The support means a lot.
Yeah.
704-570-1110. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. That News Talk 1110-993 WBT. I am Brett Witterbull alongside the coach, Matt Doherty, here in studio. In the beautiful Queen City of Charlotte. And I'm happy to welcome back to the show our very good friend, Jeffrey Lord. You know him from his terrific work at American Spectator at thejeffreylord.com. And of course, Trump, what is it? Swamp Wars, Trump versus the Old Order. And we got a very old order underway here, Jeffrey Lord.
Oh, my goodness. Do we ever?
We're going all the way back to the 80s with Tony Fauci being there as a main player in Washington, D.C. There he is at the NIH. But I want to take you to yesterday when he's talking to John Kennedy, who is personally my favorite senator in the entire Senate.
Yeah, he's becoming one of mine, too.
He's one step away from, I'm just an old country lawyer. And,
exactly.
And he says to Tony Fauci, is it possible the Chinese took the money and did gain a function? And Tony Fauci's going, well, it's not possible. It didn't happen. I don't know that ever happened. And we don't know. And I trust them. And I read the internet. What is going on? We are in for the biggest snow job since November, aren't we, Jeffrey?
Yeah. I mean, Brett, you don't have to be a nuclear scientist to understand that money is fungible. So if the Chinese are getting, are spending whatever money of their own on X function, mm-hmm. and then the United States government comes along, as one of my Pennsylvania congressmen, Guy Reschenthaler, discovered, the Obama administration kicked in $11 million to the Wuhan lab people.
Wow. So
all they have to do is take that money and apply it to something else and then take their own money, mm-hmm. and put it into gain of function. I mean, you know, it's the old thing of moving the thimbles around with the pea underneath.
Right.
I mean, we're not stupid here. And I when I listen to Dr. Fauci talk about this, oh, we didn't give any money to gain of function, I'm thinking, well, how dumb do you think we are here?
Yeah, absolutely. And for people that don't know what gain of function is, it means it's a virus that doesn't get transmitted to humans. So they soup it up. They super energize it so it then can infect humans to see what happens. That's all gain of function means. And that is
exactly right.
And it's precisely the sort of thing that the Chinese military would love to have, Jeffrey.
Of course they would. Of course they would. And, you know, let me just, as a quick aside, throw sure. one thing out there.
Yes.
You know, we're all familiar, lots of us are familiar with Dwight Eisenhower's farewell address where he talked about the military-industrial complex. But I went back and took a look at it, and he talks in there about the danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific technological elite. Well,
wow.
Hello.
Wow.
That is exactly what Anthony Fauci is all about.
It's look, we know these people like the backs of our hands. And the reality is these are the same people that covet the sort of celebration that those technocrats in Europe have over at the United Nations organizations and those sorts of things. And Anthony Fauci wants to be that guy, like a cardinal in the secular science community, where he is not to be questioned because of his standing. And the reality is, we as a nation may be exposed to a tremendous amount of liability if we funded the very thing that the PRC and the Chinese Communist Party weaponized against the world.
That's exactly right. And because Donald Trump had the nerve to suggest this in the long ago and far away, the media jumped on him. And now, lo and behold, oops, yeah, maybe he was right after all.
we know.
You can't make this up.
So we know that in the depths of the coronavirus pandemic, that we had 15 days to flatten the curve, 5 days to flatten, whatever it was going to be, right? So now we have from the president of the United States, after he killed off the Trump investigation, now all of a sudden we have 90 days to get the story straight, I think is what we're looking at, right?
Yeah, I think that's about right. And, you know, if ever there is something that should be investigated to the nth degree, mm-hmm. it's this. I mean, if you've got a pandemic that's killed hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people,
right,
or more, millions, and we're going to say, oh, no, we're not going to look at this, we're not going to look at that, that is crazy, absolutely crazy. I mean, look, human life being what it is, mm-hmm. you could have another pandemic in, what, 5 months, five
sure.
years, 50 years, et cetera. I was looking the other day at pictures. I was told as a kid that my great-grandfather died in the pandemic, the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918.
Wow.
So I set about sort of looking into it. Well, there's all these pictures of people wandering around with masks.
Right.
And it's the same sort of argument. It hasn't changed, except the difference is they knew where it came from and how it got here, and it had to do with World War One and all of that kind of stuff. Well, for heaven's sakes, find out how this got started. And nail it down now, because it can happen again.
Let's talk about the politics of this moment, too. Let's talk about the politics of this moment, Jeffrey. We are obviously, everybody's operating, Republican or Democrat, with an eye towards what's going to happen in 2022. are we likely to find this out, or can we expect Nancy and Chuck to kick this into 2022, bog it down so we don't really have any truth that we can reveal in any substantive way? I know they want to do the insurrection January 6th investigation, but I'm not hearing an equal amount of urgency in doing an investigation into this at the congressional level.
I don't think, Brett, that they can afford to do that, because that will itself become a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can just see this simplified to a campaign slogan: vote for me and I'll investigate the pandemic. Mm-hmm. You know, I just don't think. And I have to say, having studied this kind of stuff and been in the Reagan White House political office myself, presidents coming into of both parties coming into their first term off year elections generally get clobbered.
Yeah.
And I think this is going to be even more so in Joe Biden's case, based after the first 5 months he's been in office with one disaster after another. But adding this onto the situation will be fuel for the fire.
Jeffrey Lord is joining us here. A final question slash observation. He who must not be named, we know him as Hunter. Suddenly, we've got a whole new tranche of Hunter information and President Biden information with this laptop that is yielding a lot of interesting reveals. Does this go down the memory hole the way Tony Bobulinski and the rest of it did in the late days of the 2020 election?
I think no. I think at the end there's going to be more coming out, and I'll tell you one curious thing that I personally have discovered that I'm going to be writing about.
Sure.
You know, this threatened investigation of President Trump by the Manhattan District Attorney.
Right.
I looked up his campaign contributors, and his campaign contributors include somebody from the law firm that employed, you guessed it, Hunter Biden.
Unbelievable. shocked I am, Jeffrey Lord. We'll be keeping an eye out on the pieces that you're putting out. You do such great analysis, and we always appreciate the time when you come by on the show. Thanks so much for coming by, Jeff. We appreciate
you. All right,
you.
My friend.
Have a wonderful weekend. Best Memorial Day to you. All right, that's Jeffrey Lord. Lots of good stuff to pull out of it. We're going to talk about that, Coach.
He's sharp.
He is.
Good guest.
He brings it. 704-570-1110 for you to be a part of the conversation. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Boomer Von Cannon, how the roads? News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Got the coach, Matt Doherty, alongside me, Brett Witterbull, here in studio. Fast-paced hour so far.
Yeah.
Lots of information.
Yeah. Fastest hour in radio.
It really is. Oftentimes, that is the case. Let's grab a call from Corey, because he's going to set us up beautifully here. Hey, Corey, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mr. B, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, sir.
Always, full disclosure, I'm not a Democrat, Republican, liberal, right-wing, left-wing, you name it.
Yes, sir.
But, sir, I laughed my heart out when I heard Biden wants to investigate the origin of the virus when America is 50% also at fault for the virus.
Mm.
One thing I just get so upset with China using the old adage, escape. They let it out. Mm-hmm. It didn't escape. They don't have feet, hands, or brains.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what I think we should focus at.
So you're saying we're 50% responsible because we funded the investigation and you want to get down to the bottom of where it went? Is that where you're at?
No, sir. Oh. I'm saying we're 50% responsible because during the Obama administration, we sold the virus to China.
Oh, for them to do the research. I got you.
So we're responsible. We should have never even done it.
Yeah, well, look. The thing with these bioagents is that they can travel very quickly. We are no longer surrounded by, 5,000 miles of ocean on either side. We don't have to worry about it. This thing gets on somebody or gets on an airplane, and now suddenly it's all over the world. And that's the danger of bioweapons. You know, that's what it comes down to. And we start messing around with these things, and thank you for the call, Corey. It's an important point. You know, we start messing around with this stuff, Coach. You can't keep that thing. Can't keep that genie out of in the bottle, man. It's just not going to happen.
No, no. I mean, it's. I just find it, and this could be my rant later, but this is all a problem with the media. I blame the media on so much of this because whether, Trump was getting sued, right, by some group because he called it the China flu, the Wuhan flu.
Right.
And how he was persecuting all the Chinese in our country.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It came from China. It came from this lab.
Right.
It looks like that more and more each day. But yet, when Trump mentioned it, he was shamed.
Yep.
He was ridiculed.
Mm-hmm.
The media just disposed him, embarrassed him, made racist comments. And now, 6 months later, it looks like he might have been right.
Well, I think he was. Here's the deal. In our culture, we have transparency in our culture. I know there are people who are going to say, no, we don't have any transparency. We have transparency. If we released this thing out of one of our labs, somebody would have picked up the phone and called the New York Times, or the Washington Post, and said, oh, my God, we released this thing out of our lab. It's going to ravage the world. And I don't have a problem with that. That's a transparent country. Nobody did that. Nobody did that over in China. Nobody called out to the rest of the world and said, hey, this thing's on the way. Sorry, let's figure this out. Here's the genetics of the thing to look at where we can stop it. And now Australia is going into their fourth lockdown.
That's right.
I mean, this is unbelievable. How do we know? They keep talking about variants, right? Oh, there's a new variant. How do we know that's a new variant? How do we know that's not an engineered variant? How do we know that's not tweaked? That they're not saying, hey, you know, we do this. We've had Gordon Chang on this program multiple times. I'd say dozens of times since I've been here. And Gordon Chang has said that in those labs that the Chinese Communist Party military runs, the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, they are perfecting ethnic-based viruses that will hit a one group but not another group.
Really?
He's talked about it. He's done it on Fox. He's done it on my show as well. So in other words, they could say, I'm going to pick, they have a bunch of Uyghurs and Turkmen that are locked down in those concentration camps in Western China. They could perfect or tweak a virus so that there is a vulnerability in those people and they're suddenly all dead.
Right.
All right. It could be done with Italians, Germans, right. Dutch, I mean, whatever. And why would a country want to develop that kind of a weapon? Because they would want to assert supremacy in the world.
Right.
Hey, we just wiped out the entire subcontinent of India.
Right.
And so that's scary. We should be paying attention. When John Cena's on his knees apologizing to China, we should be concerned.
100%. The military, you touched on this earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the military has an interest in that lab.
For sure.
And we're giving them money. Mm-hmm. And as Jeff Lord said,
mm-hmm.
okay, we're giving them money, and then they just put it in this account, and they fund their project with their own money. So they then say, no, we didn't use your money
right.
to fund this experiment.
Right.
I mean,
that money's in that cookie jar, not this cookie
right.
jar. Right.
They're playing a shell game.
Yeah. It's what's happening. And that is the problem. First of all, China is an advanced country. They've got nuclear weapons. They've got scientists. They shot a rocket into space. They've done a lot of things. Why are we funding anything in China?
Exactly.
China can fund. Look, if it's a poor country, some country comes to us and says we would need some help developing a vaccine, penicillin for our people. Well, fine, let's do it. We got the money. Let's help them out. Why are we funding? China's a perfectly able nation.
Well, unless we're co-oping side by side on some experiment.
Okay.
Where we have our, you know, experts in there side by side going through the data.
That's right.
You know, mixing the potions together.
Yeah. Yep, that's it. And that's the frustrating reality. All right, let's check him out. You ready?
Yeah.
Here we got him. Jim, welcome to the show. What's on your mind, Jim?
Yeah, hello, Brett.
Hello.
Did you just fall down, Jim?
I'm hearing bottles clinking.
Jim, what's going on there?
What happened?
You say, thank you for letting me have an outlet for my avant-garde ideas.
Okay, go for it.
But let me remind you that when the pandemic first started, I was one of the first people to call in and suggest that it was bioengineered and that it escaped while they were trying to get it from the computer model into the vivarium.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, I want to say hello to the coach.
Hey, Jim. Who was Vivarian? I never met Vivarian.
I think he was that emperor in Rome, like in the 300s.
Yeah.
No, a vivarium is where they have all the live specimens.
Whoa.
Like, you know,
specimen.
A laboratory, and they keep them in there until they're ready to do what they're going to do to them.
Gotcha.
And so they went and had this computer model, and yes, they're working on reducing the ethnicity. And the way they do that is with DNA.
Yes, that's right. See? That's right.
Right.
Because you were listening to me a year and a half ago when I was warning about the Chinese government using the CRISPR to do genetic editing on people. And that is totally illegal, but they were doing it.
Right. But I was one of the people that called in and suggested the far out possibility that they're actually trying to narrow it down to the DNA of one specific person so they could send the virus to one person. Mm-hmm. One person would touch the envelope, the letter that they sent them.
Yes.
And one other one would touch it, and that's what happened. But the minute that guy touched it, boom.
He's done. Lights out.
Right? So,
yeah. Okay. No, I get it, Jim. It's a good point. It's a very good point. seems like a lot of use of technology to take
for
out one person.
No, you're taking
I remember Kim Jong-un, when he used nerve gas on one guy in an airport that he had two women touch him, and they had the nerve gas agent on him. You know, this is a thing. We got plenty more straight ahead.
Yes, we do.
We're going to talk about the Russian pipeline. News Talk 11. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. This song gets you fired up, Coach.
I like the song. I like it.
You're like, let's do this.
I like it.
Let's jump in the ring.
It's fung, fung. It's
fungible.
Fungible.
You can absorb it.
Right.
It's a good one, right?
I like fungible.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
You can absorb it. You can feel it in your percolation there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I percolate.
So you've got a situation here where there was a hearing on Capitol Hill yesterday. We're going to play a clip here. I think this is an important clip we can play. If you're good with this, I'm good with
this. Yeah, let's clip it.
Chuck Ross is going to come by in the next segment. We're going to talk about corruption there with the Russian pipeline reversal that Biden did. So yesterday, while testifying in front of the Senate, Joe Biden's choice to run the ATF is a gentleman. David Chipman. David Chipman used to be an ATF agent, was part of the Waco siege once upon a time. And when he left office in that position, he went and he started working for Gabby Giffords with a gun control agenda. So he's desperate to reinstate the assault weapons ban. And yesterday at the congressional hearing, this is cut 42, Tom Cotton, Republican from Arkansas, and John Kennedy, who I love from Louisiana, they were questioning him about, could you tell us what an assault weapon is? Because I know you want to ban it. Tell us what an assault weapon is. We may do some start stops here, so we may pause it. Cut 42, go. We don't have cut 42.
You have called for an assault weapons ban. I have a simple question for you. What is an assault weapon?
Senator, an assault weapon would be, in the context of the question you asked, what Congress defines it as.
So you're asking us to ban assault weapons. We have to write legislation. Can you tell me what is an assault weapon? How would you define it if you were the head of the ATF? How have you defined it over the last several years as your role as a gun control advocate?
Senator, if I'm confirmed as ATF director, my recollection is the only process by which ATF has weighed in is that I know there's a demand letter 3 program, which requires multiple reports, multiple sale reports on the southwestern border. And ATF in that program has defined an assault rifle as any semi-automatic rifle capable of accepting a detachable magazine above the caliber of .22, which would include a .223, which is, largely the AR-15 round.
So you believe that every weapon that takes a detachable magazine that can take a .22 round or 5.56 in military parlance should be defined as an assault weapon?
Let me clarify. What I believe I just said is any semi-automatic rifle.
Rifle.
Any semi-automatic rifle.
What?
That's the definition. A detachable magazine that takes a 5.56 or .22 round should be defined as an assault weapon.
Senator, you asked me if ATF had used this term. And I was sharing with you my knowledge
of a program
in which ATF has defined this term. And it is in the Demand Letter 3 mm-hmm. program. And that rifle is a semi-automatic rifle capable of accepting a detachable magazine with a round greater than a .22 caliber. And in those cases, firearms dealers on the southwest border are required to make a multiple sale report to ATF.
I'm amazed that might be the definition of assault weapon. That would basically cover every single modern sporting rifle in America today. Let me put it this way. If I wanted to buy an assault weapon and I walked into Walmart or Cabela's or some other firearm dealers and I looked up on the wall where they were labeling their weapons, would there be a label on the wall for assault weapon?
I don't believe, Senator, and thank you for this question, that the firearms industry has used the term assault rifle in their marketing since there was a ban on it. It was after that that they changed their use of the term assault rifle to the modern sporting rifle.
Well, so I've been in Walmarts and I've been in Cabela's, and I've seen that you can find sections for pistols or handguns or for shotguns or for rifles because those are actual kinds of firearms. I think our exchange here illustrates that there really is no such thing as an assault weapon. That is a term that was manufactured by liberal lawyers and pollsters in Washington to try to scare the American people into believing that the government should confiscate weapons that are wildly popular for millions of Americans to defend themselves and their families and their homes.
What's an assault weapon? Here comes John Kennedy.
Yeah. Senator, the bill to ban assault weapons is,
what is your
dozens of pages.
Of
There's no way I could define an assault weapon.
You don't have any, you're going to run this agency and you don't have a definition of assault weapon?
But I would be enforcing the definition that members of Congress
will be issuing rules and regulations. Just give me your definition.
I'll give you one definition that ATF
give me your definition.
Uses. One definition that ATF currently
give me your definition.
I can give you one definition.
If you won't answer my question, how can I vote for you? I'm done, Mr. Chairman.
How maddening is that? You're a citizen.
Embarrassing.
It's horrible.
Embarrassing.
He's a nut. I'm sorry, but that's what is that? Come on, folks. You are firearm owners out there. You own firearms. That's the person who's going to be in charge of the ATF?
Basically could take anything he wants.
Without, of course. Of
because
course.
Everything's an assault weapon.
That's right. Look, I got bonus. You want bonus material here real quick? Hold on. I'm going to give you bonus material here. I'm going to use cut number. We'll have time. Don't you worry. It's not super long. Here's bonus material when Ted Cruz is questioning this guy yesterday. And he's asking him about confiscating of weapons. Cut 29. This is cut 29. Ted Cruz from yesterday.
Far enough. You mean that you don't just want to ban the manufacturer of those rifles. You don't just want to make it illegal to sell those rifles. But you want to actively have government go after the people who currently possess firearms, and if they don't register and submit to all of the onerous restrictions of the National Firearms Act, presumably confiscate their weapons?
Senator, what I've said publicly is that, as an advocate, I prefer a system where the AR-15 and other assault weapons are regulated under the National Firearms Act.
The National Firearms Act is like essentially where you can't have a machine gun. So he's able to tell Ted Cruz what he wants to get done as an advocate. I want to confiscate him. I want to take those weapons away. But when he talks to Tom Cotton, he won't tell you what that weapon is, except it's something bigger than a .22 or a .223. These are the people. Do you understand? Joe Biden ran as a moderate, reasonable guy, but he's appointing maximum firepower progressives looking to hem you in. Chuck Ross is going to come by next, and we're going to talk about corruption. It's the Brett Woodable Show alongside the News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Coach Doherty alongside me, Brett Woodable, and we welcome to the program from the Washington Free Beacon. Chuck Ross, I read a piece of yours yesterday, Chuck, that I thought was absolutely fascinating. There's an organization that most people probably aren't that familiar with, but it's important to know about them, and they're called the Atlantic Council. They're a think tank that advises on national security and international security affairs as it relates to NATO, essentially, the Atlantic Alliance that we have. And we watched something very interesting take place in these last days, and that is a flip-flop of extraordinary scope involving the Nord Stream 2 pipeline that is going to run from Russia directly to Germany, bypassing Ukraine. And one part of the puzzle that's curious is you had Joe Biden and Donald Trump essentially on the same page, at least as of 3 weeks ago, saying we don't want to allow the Russians to hold the Europeans hostage by sending energy into Germany, where they could certainly make it hard on the Germans if they wanted to. But we come to find out two of the scholars, according to your reporting, at the Atlantic Council that's advising a lot of these public policymakers actually got paid for advocating for the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. What's going on here, Chuck?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It is a pretty interesting situation there. So the Atlantic Council, as you said, you know, not a lot of people have heard about it, but it's well known within the Beltway and foreign policy circles. They wield enormous influence on foreign policy debates. They also, in the Biden administration specifically, have a lot of influence because, you know, it's kind of a liberal-leaning institution. So mm-hmm. the Biden administration listens to these people. A lot of scholars at the Atlantic Council have, you know, they oppose the pipeline,
right.
Nord Stream 2 pipeline. But there is a faction, two factions, that supports the building the pipeline. And two scholars have been paid as lobbyists nearly $3 million since 2017 to, you know, they don't come out and say they support Putin and Russia, but they say they support the pipeline, which essentially benefits Putin and Russia. So the story is, you know, it's another murky kind of a swampy situation there between Atlantic Council and the Biden administration.
Let me pull you out just another, you know, 5-10,000 feet up in the air with this. We see this kind of stuff. We obviously see some of the revelations coming out of Hunter Biden's laptop stuff that we're seeing with quid pro quos and payoffs and things like that. This is reminding me of the 90s and the Clintons with China. This is a part of the world that really seems to have a grip on this family and on this party as we look at things. Am I misreading that?
No, I don't think you are at all. You know, everything they said about Trump and the Trump family is actually true of the Biden family and also the Clinton family back in the day. But especially with the Atlantic Council, I mean, there's an overlap there too with one of Hunter Biden's clients. You may have, you know, Burisma Holdings, which was a Ukrainian energy firm that's been dogged by bribery allegations. One of the lobbyists for Burisma is on the board of directors at this Atlantic Council. So, you know, the Atlantic Council and other think tanks, other institutions like that, kind of sit at the center and mm-hmm. help, you know, from the outside craft policy. And when it comes to the Biden administration's Russia policy, although the rhetoric is strong, they condemn Putin and condemn Russian aggression. When the rubber meets the road, they don't actually challenge Russia very much. Biden threw up his hands on this pipeline and is going to essentially allow it to be completed, mm-hmm. which, as you said at the top, you know, will allow Russia to send gas directly to Germany, and that cuts out Ukraine,
yep.
Belarus, other Eastern European countries that the Biden administration, you know, and Democrats say that they want to protect, but essentially this pipeline will just kind of lead them to Russia's, lure them further into Russia's orbit.
Okay, so let me lay this out for people, because people may not realize this. If you cross other countries, you have to pay transit fees to those countries, right? Ukraine would make money from the Russians. There's already one pipeline going through. Ukraine would make money from those transit fees. Belarus would as well. But here's the real kicker. The kicker is, if they don't send the gas through Ukraine and it goes right to Germany, and then Putin decides he wants to invade Ukraine, he's got Ukraine over a barrel twice, because they already have a pipeline for energy coming into Ukraine that he could threaten to turn off, and he can continue to supply energy to the Germans and say to the Germans, hey, you better shut up about me invading Ukraine when it gets to the United Nations and NATO, or I'm going to turn the energy off into your country, Germany, and that's the way it's going to be. So this essentially, you're facing energy blackmail, and the Germans are willing to go along with that.
Yeah, that's an excellent summary of exactly what's going on. You know, and American officials, even the Biden administration, acknowledges that that Russia can do this, but essentially, and with the help of think tanks like the Atlantic
yeah.
Council, they're kind of having faith that all of a sudden they have faith that Putin won't do that, that he won't throw that switch mm-hmm. and wield leverage
okay.
over Ukraine and Germany.
Okay, so can I give you a theory? And if you want to go yep. look it up and write about it, like, you have my permission here on the radio.
Yeah,
here it is. Okay, I believe this all comes down to the Iranian nuclear negotiations in Vienna, and I believe that that President Biden needs the Russians on board with this deal. And I think that's why he didn't blow them up off of the Colonial Pipeline hack. And I think that's why he's doing this. And these are concessions so that they can pressure the Iranians to do business with the United States, in which we will lift the sanctions on the Iranians and then they will proliferate back into Hamas. I think this is all tied in to getting Iran the nuclear deal that he said he would do. What do you think?
Yeah, I honestly had not really thought about that, but that's an excellent theory. I mean, I think one thing that we've seen in the Biden administration so far, and their dealings with pretty much every country in the world, is, you know, they're very diplomatic, but also to a fault. You know, I think to be too clever on so many deals with different countries that are our adversaries, China, Russia, Iran. That maybe they're coming up with these grand
scoundrels.
And Palestine and Israel,
without a doubt,
situation in Israel too.
Absolutely, Chuck Ross, we gotta get together more often, man. I like your stuff. I always enjoy reading it, and I want to recommend that people follow you over at the Free Beacon, and of course on Twitter as well. Thanks for coming by, man. I appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Anytime, happy to do it. I'm Brett Witterbach. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. That's something about that Ukraine pipeline. I think it's kind of important to understand that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's alarming. It's alarming how much stuff is changing before our very eyes, Coach. Did you see what happened over Lockheed Martin?
Yes, I did.
Lockheed Martin, that's a big defense contractor. They make the F-35. They make a lot of important stuff for the government to keep us safe and free. Apparently, they're doing some kind of new training. Did you see this?
Yes, I did.
Lockheed Martin took executives and put them through training to unlearn white male privilege. And it's the nation's largest defense contractor put top executives through a 3-day training to deconstruct their white male culture and unlearn their white male privilege. 13 employees, including a former 3-star general and the vice president for production of the F-35 fighter jet program, attended the program on Zoom last year, led by one of these people that runs these things, a consulting firm, White Men as Full Diversity Partners, according to City Journal's Christopher Rufo. So they're trying to awaken the white men.
Listen, to me, it's all about how is this interpreted? How is the content interpreted? Now, apparently, the writer, Rufo.
Yes.
Obtain some internal documents.
Yes.
I read the article. I'd like to read before I comment.
Sure.
Because my initial reaction is probably like a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Like, this is twisted. This is, you know, don't make me feel guilty for being white.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But having been a head basketball coach in college.
Sure, sure.
Having been on teams with African-American players,
right,
people of color,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
now as an executive coach where you're trying to promote diversity and inclusion,
mm-hmm,
it's all on how it's done.
Sure.
Because it's all about empathy. Like, let me walk in your shoes as best I can.
That's right.
So let's have a round table, mm-hmm, and tell me what offends you, mm-hmm, about white people. How do you get offended? And we might not even realize we're offending you.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. Sure, 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 sure.
But if, mm-hmm, it's just, you know, white people and they're telling them to kind of walk it back and, the white male privilege, the white male culture,
mm-hmm,
awaken together. You know, to me, I want to read more of it because I don't want to pass a judgment on this and be off base if the intention is good and the delivery is accurate. Because I think it's good for any group to sit around the table,
right,
and say, you know, listen, I grew up Irish Catholic.
Yeah, yeah,
you,
sure,
might have grown up Italian,
right,
in Boston,
right.
You know, and,
mm-hmm,
and what I think's important and what we're probably more alike than we're not.
Yeah, definitely.
But the differences are so highlighted and, yeah, polarized, mm-hmm, that it caused problems. But I think it's healthy, mm-hmm, to sit around as a team and discuss, like, hey, this upsets me. This is an upset, you know, my culture for, yeah, a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not even realize that you're offensive in your comments.
And that's a huge point.
That, and so to me, I want to do a deeper dive. I don't want to say this is just a bad program.
Right.
Because that white male privilege, that white male culture, all that's in quotes. So that's someone's interpretation.
Well, yeah, it is.
I'd like to see the content.
And it's Rufo's write-up on this. So two of the trainers, a trainer by the name of Michael Welp. So it was Michael Welp and Bill Proudman were two of these people who were running this. And so the diversity partners team is the white men as full diversity partners team. Jim Morris, Mark Havens, Michael Welp framed the purpose of the training session as providing a benefit for white men who embrace the diversity and inclusion philosophy. Okay, so it wasn't just people of color. It was a number of elements in there as well. And one of these that I think is actually kind of interesting, at the Lockheed training, they did what they call baseline exercises, where they're trying to kind of figure out where people are. And it's the firm's founders, Welp and Proudman, argued that white males must work hard to understand their white privilege, male privilege, and heterosexual privilege. So it's not just race, it's also sexual identity, which affords them unearned benefits. The firm's training programs are designed to assist white men in discovering the roots of white male culture. The culture, according to Welp and Proudman, consists of traits. These are traits that they think are white traits. Rugged individualism, can-do attitude, hard work, striving towards success. Those are superficially positive, said Welp and Proudman, but are devastating to women and minorities.
Now, I'll disagree with that all day long.
Okay.
I mean, that's a family. That's a function of the leadership in your family.
Right.
And you're parenting.
So in order to cement the idea that white male culture is devastating to racial minorities and women, the trainers had the Lockheed employees read a series of I'm tired statements from fictitious racial minorities and women. The statements included, I'm tired of being black, I'm tired of you making more money than me, I'm tired of people disparaging our campaigns like Black Lives Matter, I'm tired of black boys and girls being murdered, I'm tired of people thinking they're smarter than other people. So that was one element of this. The other one was, when you get to the heterosexual privilege statements, they read these statements. My culture teaches me to minimize the perspectives and powers of people of other races. I can commit acts of terrorism, violence, or crime and not have it attributed to my race.
That is so absurd. Those two sentences right there. I grew up with three sisters, older sisters.
Right.
So there was tremendous respect for women in my household.
Right.
And then to think that just because you're white, you could get away with terrorism, like that. That's like the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Right. And so the reason why I'm diving this, and that's from the Rufo thing. I sent you a link to the Rufo thing from Manhattan Institute. Here's the thing about this. We hear a lot about allies, the need for allies in changing the country, the culture, things like that. When you start like ascribing these thoughts, like you said, I can commit terrorism, get away with it. Well, no. Tim McVeigh went to the death chamber for attacking the Murrah building in Oklahoma City. When you do that, what you're doing is, I think, you're alienating people that would otherwise want to have a real conversation about how is it that we get to a place where we can collaborate, we can work together, I've got your back, you got my back, and we're just, you know, we can have a much more collaborative environment. It's when you make people, it's very reminiscent of reading... something that's been written for you to read in front of a camera.
Right.
They have a term for that I'm not going to use, hostage tape. I mean, it's the sort of thing that you look at and you go, so then wait, so if you're going to have me reading these statements, what are you doing with the video?
Right.
What's is that video going to stay in the room? Is that going to be videoed? Is it being audio recorded? Are you going to have an audio recording of me saying I can commit acts of terrorism and nothing will happen to me? And for what purpose do you want me to get that on tape? So I think this is the overplaying of a hand in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
And we can certainly talk about that more. 704-570-1110. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Brett Witterbull alongside the coach, Matt Doherty. Show is flying by today, Coach.
Yes, it is.
So there is a Atlanta councilman, a councilman, city councilman in Atlanta named Antonio Brown. He wanted to, he's voting to defund the police in Atlanta. We've seen this explosion of violence in different cities around the country. He is running for the mayor, the mayorship of Atlanta. He voted to defund millions of dollars from the local police department's budget. Unfortunately, he had his car stolen by a group of young thieves this week and wound up thanking the cops for helping him get his car back.
How about that?
He just got out of his white Mercedes coupe to speak to fellow community leader Ben Norman in Northwest Atlanta's Dixie Hills community Wednesday when he spotted four or five kids, the youngest only six or seven. The children were walking around a store. Within seconds, they were inside his car. One kid was in the driver's seat, Brown told the outlet. Ben attempted to open the door to get him out of the car. He fought with Ben. I then engaged and tried to get him out of the car. The three other kids were trying to figure out how to get in the car or stay out of the car. He started to hit the gas and he went. The kid. This is like that. Remember in D.C.
Yes.
A couple weeks back?
Yes, where the owner of the Uber car got killed.
Murdered. So these are kids. These are 6 and 7 and 8 and 12-year-olds. As he started to speed up, I knew that if I had not let go, I would probably have killed myself because he was going so fast. I would have started to tumble, and I would have hurt him. Thanks to everyone who reached out to check on me. So he wanted to defund the police. The police got him his car back.
Did he thank him?
He did. He said the reason why this happened is this is a generational poverty issue. These kids, it's 12:30 in the afternoon. Why aren't they in school, Coach?
Yeah.
Why aren't we enforcing the systems to ensure that if they're not in school, they're in rec centers? When we were kids, I mean, I don't mean to sound like an old man, but weren't you kind of worried if you were out and you weren't in school that a cop or a truant officer would stop you and be like, what are you doing?
That implies that I was playing hooky. I went to school.
No, me too.
I don't know about you.
Me too, but I'm saying, but if you were
in El Paso,
for example.
El Paso.
Well, if I had to run across El Paso del Norte into Juarez and get something and come back, then, you know, I mean, who knows? But, there's an unfortunate addendum to this story. Should I read it?
Well,
Brown, who is under indictment on several federal fraud charges related to alleged incidents that occurred years before he took the city council office in 2019, launched his mayoral run on a platform of reimagining public safety in Atlanta. Are you running for the mayorship if you're under indictment?
Or
I think I'm clearing that up first, or something.
Isn't he the one you just said wanted to defund the police?
He wants to defund the police. He was one of seven council members who voted in support of an ordinance to withhold $73 million.
Yeah, how's that working for all these mayors?
It's not working well.
You know, Minnesota.
Yes.
Minneapolis.
That's right.
Hired private security firm.
That's correct.
When things got out of hand a couple of weeks ago.
That's right. That's right. Private and 3 days ago, during the commemoration of the death of George Floyd, the AP's trying to do a stand-up report in the street by the CHOP, and all of a sudden there's a gun battle that breaks out.
That's right. And then on the west side of Manhattan today,
that's right.
There's a shootout.
Right.
So how's this defunding the police working out?
It's not.
Now, and then let's let these nonviolent criminals out of jail.
Right.
And by the way, let's just let anybody come into this country across the border.
Unscreened.
Now, if we arrest them, we release them back into back into our communities versus sending them back to Mexico, which is what Trump did. Ron DeSantis down in Florida is suing the Biden administration because Biden reversed that rule, that law, that if you arrest somebody who's a criminal from Mexico, you have to release him back into your state.
Right.
But Trump said, no, we're sending them back to Mexico.
And in fact, at the beginning of this next hour, we're going to talk about, there was a town hall last night that Sean was putting on Fox.
Oh, that's good.
Talking to a bunch of governors about the different challenges out there. And the governors are really the secret sauce in this. We'll talk about that. Let's take this call from Shelley, who I think is right on the money. Shelley, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yesterday you had Ms. Belbon Leak on tape talking about how it's the school's responsibility to teach these children.
Yes.
And the schools are failing the children. The children are out stealing cars from people who are running for mayor. How are we supposed to teach those children if they're not even in school? And whose responsibility is that? Who's going to be held accountable for that?
That's a look, that's a really important point that you make, Shelley. I appreciate the call. Remember, it was you start to stack these things up. We're stacking here, Coach. We are remembering, what was it, 2 months ago? The kid in Chicago at 3 o'clock in the morning, the cop shot and killed him because he had a gun.
Yes.
He was running around with a 21-year-old. The kid was 13 or 12 running around, and he lost his life at the hands of a police officer because he had a gun in his hand. That comes on. I thought there was juvenile hall. Like, did juvenile hall go away? Because, I mean, I know that there's like the California Youth Authority and different iterations in that state. If you get arrested, you don't go to adult prison, but there should be someplace you go where you get
juvie. That's what my kids called it.
You get talked.
Not that they went to it. They didn't go to it. Let's clear that up. Patty and Tucker did not go to juvie, but that's what they called it.
What was visiting day? Was it Wednesday? Wednesday morning?
I brought them a cake with the file in it.
With a file in it? How do they do that? When they bring the cake with the file, seriously, when they bring the cake with the file, all right, how do those
papers... You got to chew softly.
How do those papers in the cake not get all wilted and ruined because they're in the file? You put the file in the cake. How are you supposed to read those papers after they've been baked and battered?
Read the papers.
It's a file.
Oh, yeah, it's bad.
Put the file in the cake.
That was bad, El Paso.
New stuff. We're not due for a break yet. We got a little bit of time. We got another minute.
That was bad.
What do you mean that was not?
That was bad. That was a dad joke, and I'm not your son. Whoa, hey, how about? I'm going off script here.
Yeah, very much so.
How about Biden nor Harris have visited the freaking
border? They're not going to go down there because that's a bad photo op. That's a bad – what will happen is – and you know what? I'll tell you something really quick. There was a politician that went down to the border between San Diego and Tijuana, and he's talking about securing the border, and you know what happened? He was the attorney general. It was Jeff Sessions. And he couldn't even stop hecklers from getting in the perimeter. And people said, you couldn't stop hecklers from getting in the perimeter? How are you going to stop people from crossing illegally? Right. You got to secure the situation. We see these videos that are coming in.
It's unbelievable.
There's our friend Art Del Cueto comes on the show sometimes.
That's him?
That's him. We're going to take a break. We got a great hour straight ahead. We want you to be a part of it. 704-570-1110. News Talk 1110-993. WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Great to be here with you and alongside the coach, Matt Doherty. Wonderful to have you in studio, Coach.
Always a pleasure.
It is it is indeed an interesting sort of a news environment that we're looking at out here. We've hit a lot of different issues, the gun control issue, obviously, COVID-19, a number of these challenges. But what do you say we take this right up to... the University of North Carolina. You're an alumnus of UNC, and we've been watching an interesting battle take place with the tenure fight.
Yes.
Involving Professor Jones.
That's right.
They're famous for her 1619 work.
Mrs. Jones.
Mrs. Jones. Yes. And so what we're seeing now that I think is very interesting is we're starting to see, at least it feels like, debate taking place over curriculum that's going to get taught and what professors tenured and non-tenured are going to get caught, are going to be talking about. Is there a new dynamic that's taking place with these universities?
I think so. I talked to a gentleman who is fairly well connected at the university.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about how different UNC's is now and a lot of colleges are with not only their teachings but kind of the pressure you get from professors to the students. Mm-hmm. You can't really be an independent thinker. You got to think like they think.
Right.
And you sometimes get bullied into thought. So when Hannah Jones was brought on as a professor in the journalism school, and she's an alum,
right?
She was going to get tenure. But mm-hmm. then there was pushback from the Board of Governors, mm-hmm. apparently. So this is what I understand. The Board of Trustees, now the Board of Governors is a board above the Board of Trustees,
right.
And there are a couple of people try to get were put on, I think, by the chancellor on the Board of Trustees and got blocked by the Board of Governors.
Gotcha.
The Board of Governors is a little bit more conservative than the Board of Trustees. Mm-hmm. And so they're pushing back. And I think that I got a sense just the last couple of days that the right is starting to feel like, you know what, you've kicked enough sand in our face. Mm-hmm. You've called us names. Mm-hmm. You've whitewashed us, made, you know, anybody who believes in the right is not only conservative but racist. And I think people are starting to get tired of it, the whole woke thing. Mm-hmm. And so the Board of Governors pushed back on this hire, and instead of giving a tenure, she's just a contracted professor.
Now, this is what's interesting, because I think with the shutdowns of the schools, universities, public high schools, things like that, I think people became much more acquainted with the curriculum, with the things that were being talked about, things that were being discussed. College students who may have come home early because the school had been shut down for that part of the year.
Parents were home.
Suddenly
more.
We're talking to the parents and we're saying, hey, here's what we're learning, here's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that engaged a lot more people to come into the system and have a conversation about it.
I think that's a good point.
I mean, when you think about when you were in college, or I think about when I was in college, When you would get home for the holiday, or you get home for spring break or summer break, you're not going to sit there and talk with your parents about what you learned in class. No. You want to get out and see your friends.
It was like, Dad, can I have the car keys?
Exactly. And so now it's like a much more open conversation. Hey, we're learning this. We're talking about that. No, Dad, you're wrong about this. Or Mom, you're right about that. Because it's an interactive reality now.
Well, plus with cell phones and iPads and computers, you know, you can just forward some information. Or, you know, I was allowed to call home once a week, and it was on a Sunday afternoon because that's when the rates were cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
What a true. That's old school throwback.
Old school. Or how about this? You get to your dorm room and you dial the phone. It rings once and you hang up to let your mom know you got home. Go back to school.
See, I that was one of them. And the other one was a person to person phone.
Yeah,
call.
Person to person. And they reject it.
Looking for. He's not here.
He's not here.
Click.
Love you, Mom.
I mean, that was a scam and a half. Now, something else happening at the UNC system that I think is interesting. Applying for the UNC system university in the fall of 2022, you don't have to submit SAT or ACT scores.
Yeah.
The Board of Governors, those are the more conservative guys, voted Thursday to extend the waiver for standardized test requirements to the state's universities.
I think that's good.
And that's gonna it's at least through 2022.
I think you end up getting a more well-rounded student. Mm-hmm. Just because you have great SAT scores or ACT scores doesn't mean you're going to add great value to the school. I think the school has passed up on a lot of quality kids that could have added great value, not only to the school during their 4 years, but thereafter. A lot of friends, a lot of people I knew who were legacies at UNC, and their kids are 4-0, 4-5, quarterback on the football team, you know, honor society, couldn't get into school.
Yeah.
And they're like, what?
Yeah.
Now, universities are businesses. So do you think that family's going to be inclined to write a big check?
Yeah. It's a good point.
Oh.
Huge point.
It's a great, hey, Brett, that's a great point.
It's a great point. And, you know, it says nothing about, you know, I think at some point we're going to see the institution of an academic draft where we're going to have the top universities vying for these people. And they'll, you know,
you think?
I think that's what you'll see at some point.
Yeah.
Tara wants to check in with us.
All right.
Hello, Tara. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey.
How are you?
So my thing is this, with so much of how we need to prepare ourselves as white people, I tell you, my group of people, and it involves some conservative black people, when are we going to start addressing what the black people need to do with their community and their families?
Well, I mean, look, I think it's an open conversation at this point. And I think we are seeing those issues be raised, not in an institutional way, but I think people are generally talking about all this stuff. I mean, it's, you know, in general. And I think it's going both ways, Tara. I mean, I do. It's going much more with CRT than that.
But, I think Tara brings up a point that, you know, is hard to touch because you get much blowback.
Right, but we just talked about the situation in Atlanta. We're talking about the situation in different cities and things like that. Activists came in and said defund the police. Now there are consequences for defunding the police. So I do think there's definitely a give and take on both ends of the equation. It's just there's more take and less give in certain circumstances.
Well, I think she was referencing more of what's in the workforce and the perceptions that dialogue, and that's a very touchy thing to bring up in society today. Mm-hmm. Because you'll get labeled quick.
Yeah, it's a challenging situation. We'll continue the conversation straight ahead. 704-570-1110. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Brett Winterbull alongside the coach, Matt Doherty. One of the things that's been overlooked in the conversation in politics is how right Donald Trump turned out to be on a number of different issues.
Really? You think?
He has turned out to be right more than he was wrong. Well, right a lot of the time. You look at the Wuhan Virology Institute.
Where's that located?
That's in Wuhan, China. China. And he was blasted for even talking about that when he was the president. They were blocking him out of Facebook. They were blocking him out on the social media, saying that's controversial and you're going to lead to violence against people who are of Asian descent.
Xenophobia. Yeah. That was Biden that said that.
That is exactly correct. But what do we have right now? We have a very serious investigation into what's going on with the Wuhan Virology
Institute. Where's that located?
That's in China. China. Next up, law and order. Law and order twofold. The border and in cities.
Mm-hmm.
You have millions of people living in cities right now that don't feel safe because mayors like Lori Lightfoot, who won't even give an interview to a white reporter, Bill de Blasio, whose approval numbers I think are in the negatives, with Andy Cuomo and company, and then Gavin Newsom out in California. Look at these people that are running these places, and look at the hellscapes that we've got in American cities. And who suffers the most? Those who can bear it least. The working class, the poor, the single moms and dads that are trying to get their kids educated. Are you kidding me? They got to dodge bullets every night. 48 people get shot routinely in cities like Chicago.
New York City, open fire, west side of Manhattan, broad daylight.
And what did we hear? Donald Trump, you want a police state. You want to bring in fascism. It's not fascism. It's safety.
Law and order.
Correct. So you've got that on the domestic front. On the international front, what do you have? You have a situation wherein Donald Trump comes out and says, we need to secure the border with Mexico. We have a remain in Mexico policy. You know who will like that policy too? Mexico, because they had an impetus to shut down the transit
down at the southern border
of Guatemala. So, I mean, you've got that situation. International affairs, here's another one for you. How about backing Bibi Netanyahu? The minute we start to go soft and send $238 million to Hamas, what do you have happen? Hamas starts firing rockets into Israel. 4,000 rockets from Hamas.
I love the way you say Hamas.
Well, I said Guatemala, and I said Hamas.
Oh, well, now you're bragging. I mean, I didn't say anything about Guatemala. I like the way you said it, but, like, you know, Hamas. I can't say it. Like
Hamas.
Hamas.
Hamas. It's actually an acronym, by the way. It's not like Hamas. It's also an acronym. So you got that. Who called out Fauci?
Yeah.
Trump.
And Fauci looks like a clown.
It's a clown show. You know.
What about Warp Speed? They said he couldn't get a vaccine by the new year.
Correct.
And what did he do?
That's right.
He got a vaccine. And who's taking credit for it? Biden.
Biden.
How about Trump calling out Hunter Biden and his relationships with Moscow and China,
mm-hmm.
and the laptop where everyone said it's a joke? Hunter Biden says, well, I'm not sure if it's mine or not. Like,
I don't remember.
Who doesn't remember if you dropped off a laptop?
It was a little hazy. A little fuzzy.
At a shop.
A laptop shop.
Laptop shop. Well, he might have gotten some, mm-hmm. you know. Anyway. So it comes out now that, yes, indeed, he may have had some encounters with some shady people.
Correct.
In D.C. with his dad.
Yeah. But look, when Hunter Biden was president, was on the Burisma board while Joe Biden was vice president, we went through the numbers yesterday, he was making $83,000 a month. Okay?
A month.
The minute Biden leaves office, they cut him and they whack him in half. He had, the poor guy, coach, he had to make it on $44,000 a month.
That's rough. It's rough out there.
Are you kidding me? He's got to get a second job shaking people down. Joe Biden's budget calls for $8.2 trillion in spending
by
the year 2031.
Can I just propose a solution to what we've had to deal with since last October, November?
Yes, sir.
We need some rich right-wing people to purchase some major media outlets or create major media outlets to combat the left.
Mm-hmm. You could just launch your own media outlet. I mean, it's fairly cheap. You don't have to even be that rich now.
But I mean, to
have impact?
To have impact. Like Matt's Daily Newspaper doesn't get it.
Can I float this one by you?
Yeah, float it.
This is a culture war issue, okay?
Is it fungible?
Fungible, no. Michigan high school principal informed the senior class valedictorian that it's inappropriate for her to mention her faith in Jesus Christ in her speech. Hillsdale High School principal Amy Goldsmith reviewed the first draft of Elizabeth Turner's valedictory address and objected to the paragraphs in which the senior discussed her relationship with Jesus Christ and its significance on her future.
I heard that. Isn't there freedom of speech?
There is, and of religion. And of religion.
And I wonder if and when they have that said graduation, she doesn't just throw it in there anyway.
Well, see, this is what I think. I think when you get told no, I think you put it in there, you throw it in there, and you throw it in there right up front.
And just stare at the principal.
You just say, listen, I just want to dedicate this speech to my Lord and Savior. Boom. And that's it. That's what you do. I mean, I don't understand there is a strain of Christophobia that I think is very, very damaging to the culture. And it's not that you have to believe all the same, but everybody should be free to believe.
Sure.
And everybody should be free to express what they believe.
Well,
how does it hurt anything?
The left wants inclusion and diversity when it suits them. Right. So if you say, I'm a conservative Christian, they're not going to be inclusive of that. They're not going to, they don't accept that.
Right.
It only accepts what they want. So, you know, to say, I am a conservative Christian, they want to shame you, call you a racist, and call you all kinds of names instead of being accepting, and they want you to be accepting of them.
It was like the people who, in the 2017 election, were living in Manhattan and were saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe Hillary lost. I don't know anybody that voted for Donald Trump because you're on the Upper West Side. Hello? Bo Thompson comes by next. We'll take your phone calls as well. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Brett Witterbull alongside the coach, Matt Doherty. And we bring in our very good friend from the Bo Thompson Morning Show, the Bo Show. Bo Thompson, how are you, Bo?
Hey, guys. Hope y'all are well.
We are doing fantabulously, man. Are you kidding me? Good to have you back. A lot of stuff to talk about that's going on out there in the world. But let's start with something a little fun and a little on the softer side, shall we? Let's talk about, have you seen this? Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady are going to join Phil Mickelson and Bryson DeChambeau in the next The Match golf event. Are you ready for this?
I am.
Yeah, this is this is on the heels of, what was it? It was Peyton and Tiger and Brady and Mickelson. I think that was the matchup.
That's right.
Some combination of those four. But now it's going to be, like you say, Bryson and Rodgers against Brady and Mickelson. Although I feel like they're missing a huge opportunity here. No disrespect to Phil Mickelson, but Phil Mickelson could just be he could be the referee if they were to somehow get Brooks Koepka on the other side and have Bryson versus Brooks. I mean, I know you guys have been following this little feud this week, but man, that's got some juice.
What do you think, Coach?
I think Phil could do the commentary. He could walk the course, and he could have the microphone, and then all of a sudden you'd see Koepka and DeChambeau like rolling around in a sand trap.
Yes.
Yeah. That would be good TV, quality
and,
TV.
And Phil would say something like, hey, winner gets my autograph.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well
yeah.
done.
Yeah.
Well done. That'll work beautifully. Other stuff going on around the world a little bit on the heavier side, but we got to dive into this. So apparently Joe Biden is dropping a $6 trillion budget, and he says that by 2031 it wants to be spending $8.2 trillion a year in budget. Just for those keeping score at home, I think we're about $2.5 trillion is what we normally spend on a budget. We are exponentially exploding the debt if this is the case, gentlemen.
Well, this is where we thought we were going, right? When you and I were talking earlier this week, we were talking about the that the Biden administration would go a few more days, maybe a week of at least trying to appear that they were faith negotiating, but the salvos were thrown that if that didn't go anywhere, then they were going to take it on their own towards the end of the week, and here we are. Or at least they're charting the path here at the end of the week.
Yeah, that's the thing. And so, you know, the Republicans are going one direction. Biden's going a completely different direction. This is going to be quite a showdown. And I have to believe there are going to be some fiscal hawks, quote unquote, fiscal hawks in the Senate that are going to say no, no, no to a $6 trillion budget.
Yeah, you would think that if what you mean by that is both sides, you know, so maybe even some.
Whoa.
That have to balk at that number.
Yeah, that number is it's insane. I mean, you're talking about, you know, ballooning the debt to an insanely alarming level. Elsewhere, let's go here. Chicago, mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, sued for allegedly denying a white reporter an interview. This is all coming on the heels of her saying she'd hit the midterm of her first term, and she was only going to be speaking to reporters who were people of color. You know, one cannot possibly be surprised by this revelation.
Well, it's one thing to be in a news conference and, you know, turn someone down or ignore them, or, you know, for example, I think about Brett Jensen.
Who Absolutely.
Talking about the fact that he thought he was this close to getting a question in with Governor Cooper yesterday, and apparently he was almost there, although when it came to the Q&A part, the governor left, so he missed that opportunity. I bring that up because we can think of times where presidents or governors or whoever have been, you know, picky about who they call on. Another thing to completely telegraph it and say, here's who I'm not going to call on, and I'm putting it right out there. And in this case, she takes it a step further and basically drawing it on racial lines.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think access to the elected officials, especially in these uncertain times in many cities, it's of vital importance. And I don't know that it's worth I could see coming out and saying, I'm going to emphasize reporters who are people of color doing interviews with them, but I'm going to talk to everybody because I want to get the messaging out to every possible community that I can. You know, I mean, that's one of the challenges. All right. Brett Jensen was on the show to kick it off at 3:05, Bo, and we were talking about the big reveal coming out of the Gastonia Honey Hunters, who are bringing Magic Johnson out to throw the opening pitch. That's a pretty big get for the Honey Hunters.
I saw that. I still... is there a connection that I'm unaware of how this happened? I mean, we wanted to get the biggest name we could lure and he came, or is he in town for something else, or is there some connection to the Honey Hunters that I don't know about with Magic Johnson?
He apparently has a relationship with someone in the organization that is they have business relationships together.
Okay.
So I think this was one of these where you phone a friend and you say, hey, what do you say you come out here? Because the obvious natural question that Coach asked was, you know, is this a Dodgers operation? Well, it's
I've been dreaming about this moment for a long time in the past.
Sorry about that. So it looks like it's a business relationship that's bringing in that kind of spotlight. But that is a really great spotlight to be coming in for the Honey Hunters.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's a huge get for them. And you know, obviously there's the baseball connection with the Dodgers.
Right.
You know, there's been Magic Johnson is a huge star, but he's also equally adept businessman with all he's done. I mean, you know that better than anybody, having lived out there. I mean, the guy has his post you know, on court life has been incredibly successful on the business side.
For sure.
To know that, I mean, he's got, you know, he's got business dealings in probably every state in the country, and this,
yeah,
this is great for them, though. I mean, a lot of the coverage this morning, like Channel 3, had Al Conklin out there broadcasting part of their morning show from the actual stadium, and I remember when they opened up what was then BB&T Ballpark right down the street for the Knights, when the Knights came back to Uptown and we did our show from there. And it's, you know, it's a great scene, and it's great for Gastonia, and that even just ups the ante even more.
Finally, there's this, and I want to get UN coach's response in this. Last night, you saw Derrick Rose have a pretty tremendous game, the New York Knicks playing the Atlanta Hawks. This is Derrick Rose talking after the game about what this meant to him. Go.
I've been dreaming about this moment for a long time. In the past, people said I couldn't play the minutes. They was worried about it, but I knew all along how much hard work I put into it. Like I said, I'd be on my feet for 2 hours. So you tell me I can't play like 30 minutes in a game with the way that I changed, the way that I played. So I'm happy with my endurance. I'm happy that we got the win tonight too.
So that's Derrick Rose. You talk about in your book Pain to Passion,
yeah,
pursuing and succeeding and fighting and fighting and fighting. It's good to see him coming back.
You know what? I've coached against Derrick Rose when he was at Memphis. I was at SMU. And Rookie of the Year, I mean, MVP, and injury, and then his career is never the same.
Right.
And yet he's got the determination, mm-hmm, you know, to use the term rebound, mm-hmm, from that, and come back and accept whatever roles were given to him.
Right.
You know, he didn't start that game yesterday.
Right.
And he is all in with Tom Thibodeau. Like, Tom Thibodeau's great article on ESPN.com has all, you know, has his guys. And Julius Randle's becoming one of his guys.
Right.
And Derrick Rose is his guy. You know, he brings Derrick Rose with him and trusts him.
Right.
But Derrick works his tail off and talks about, you know, I've gotten my body right. I've worked hard, so mm-hmm, I'm ready for this. And there's no substitute for that work.
Yeah.
You can't just show up and snap your fingers and think it's good. It's as in anything.
Yeah.
It takes practice, takes repetition, and that gives you the confidence, yep, to perform when the lights are on.
Yeah. And Bo, to tie this all in one big bow together, pardon the phrase, it does help that you've got the electricity of the fans in the arena firing, oh, yeah, this stuff up, right?
Especially in New York.
I was watching this, excited again and packed again, and you know, Spike Lee on the sideline. and you kind of have to think about maybe somebody like Grant Hill as far as, I mean, remember Grant Hill? He came into the league and then he got injured and he,
yep,
came back late in his career with the Phoenix Suns. And, you know, I know Carmelo wasn't injured. He just he fell out of favor and was out of the league, but now he's back with Portland. It's cool to see these guys who were once, you know, the big cats of the NBA come back and maybe have a second act. And if, man, I mean, look, I don't know what the coach thinks about this, but I think the Knicks probably need to win a few more games. And I mean, even if they don't win this series, what they've done making Knick basketball matter again. This team has a ton of draft picks, and I think what's going to happen here is they're going to take this, however far they go, they're going to pull somebody in, one more big name, and then suddenly, you know, the Knicks are back, and I think that's good for the NBA.
House money.
Well, it's certainly good to have the Knicks, the Celtics, Chicago, yeah, and L.A., right? There's no hiding that. You know, the big thing is Julius Randle. He's a free agent, so does he re-sign? Well, all signs point to that because of the great year he's having. And, you know, as a longtime Knicks fan, man, they haven't won a championship since 72.
That's right. And they haven't really been hot since the chase.
Yeah.
Well, wouldn't it be great to see the Knicks get good? And obviously you have the Nets there, and you got that kind of New York rivalry going on. I mean, New York basketball in the pros has not been much to talk about,
yeah,
in a while, since Patrick
Good
Ewing,
point.
Basically.
Good point.
And, man, I love it. I love seeing it happen. Madison Square Garden hopping is a cool thing to see.
Bo Thompson, who you got sitting with you tomorrow?
One guy you may have heard of, one John Hancock.
Woo-hoo!
Will be back in the studio tomorrow.
Stoked. I'll be tuning in. We're going to be – go ahead.
Sorry?
No, just go ahead.
I was just going to say, he's working on a little project that he's going to tell us about tomorrow, which is very exciting. And I can't believe we've made it through this whole thing. And are you just going to roll past the biggest story of the day, Brett Winterble?
What's that?
That Terry Silver is coming back in season 4 of Cobra Kai.
All right, we will dive into that tomorrow in greater detail at 8:35, all right? Because
yes,
I'm getting the hook here otherwise.
The teaser, right. The trailer's out there. It's 10 seconds long about, but it's there.
Good stuff. Bo Thompson, tune into him tomorrow starting at 5. I'm Brett Winterble, News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Boomer Von Cannon, how the roads? Oh, is the show already over?
Oh, Garrison shows up, it's over.
Oh, it goes so fast. But at least I get to talk to Mark Garrison. Happens to be my favorite time in the entire program.
Yeah.
Mark Garrison, good to have you back.
Thank you very much.
What do we got coming up on the Charlotte at 6 show?
Busy hour ahead. We'll lead off talking a bit about this police shooting today in Charlotte. Suspect in a robbery apparently fired at an officer. Officer returned fire. Suspect in the hospital.
Uh-huh.
Washington President Biden telling American spies, go find out if COVID came from the lab.
You know, he did say this once upon a time, Trump, and people doubted him. You know what I'm saying?
So now we're sending James Bond to find out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of that, at the airport in Charlotte, we'll visit there. They're saying, what COVID? It's the good old days. Big crowds, grouchy people at the TSA, and overbooked flights. Ah, the joy of normal.
I was there yesterday, just a little bit after this time, and it, forget it. It was like 2019 all over again.
That's right. 6:20 will go live. Brett Jensen is down chasing the honey hunters. Makes it sound like he's looking for a date, doesn't it?
It does.
Well, he probably is. On the company dime, too. Okay. Yeah, that's the new ballpark in Gastonia. Magic Johnson is there. So,
how about that? Yeah. How about Magic coming
in? That's cool.
That's wonderful thing.
6:35, Dirty Restaurant Thursday. So, big show.
What do they do? Give me a hint.
Oh.
What'd they do?
We'll go to a restaurant where the inspector basically said, there's no safe food handling going on here.
Gosh. All right, this is good. All right, I'm in. You got me. You hooked me there. All right, Mark Garrison's coming up. Yeah, absolutely. Mark Garrison's up next. Charlotte at 6. You know, it's so interesting to look at how it is. You know, we were playing that clip from Derrick Rose and how at one point people essentially had written him off and said that, you know, he couldn't get it done. Never, ever, ever, ever discount the value of hard work and a work ethic. You may not succeed when it comes to pursuing a lifelong dream, but as long as you wake up and your feet hit the floor and you thank the good Lord for allowing you to do that because you're on this side of the dirt, you've got an opportunity to pursue it, and you've got an opportunity to succeed and to exceed expectations. And I don't want to sound like a Hallmark card, but that's really what it comes down to. Putting in the work. And eventually, you'll be recognized for that level of commitment. We have so many tremendous people here, including, of course, thanks so much to Coach Matt Doherty for spending time with us today, Josh for running the board, and, of course, our great friends over in the newsroom, including Anna and Mark Garrison, and, of course, Boomer Von Cannon and Brett Jensen. I am Brett Winterble. It is Charlotte at 6 up next.